everybody. This is Patricia Corey. You're listening to Beyond the Matrix, the radio program that dares you to think outside the box. Yes, it's true. And before I bring in my amazing guest who's going to help me do that with you, for you today, I just want to talk about a few things. One of them is this. I'm sending out my newsletter today. And by the way, if you want that, please go to my website, SyrianRevelations.net. And sign up for it, and you'll start to receive it. Oh, it's usually bi-monthly. Bi-monthly, I mean every 2 months, not twice a month, so I don't know how to say it anymore. I've lost my command of the King's English. At any rate, there are three subjects on this newsletter. One is the UFO phenomenon, which we'll be talking about for sure today. My slice on this is how exciting it is that we are getting so many sightings all around the world, just as the Syrian revelations predicted, and just as I've been talking about for over 2 years now in my workshops. And I'm amazed at the response I'm getting to this information. Some people are saying, wow, how exciting, how empowering, and others write and say, Patricia, why are you sending out fearful information? And the reaction is very interesting. We really are very divided on this experience. Of course, it's not surprising considering it is the biggest event that humankind probably will ever have known. But nonetheless, in our communities, there is a big divide. Some people are in great fear. Some people are in great anticipation. And there is a lot of suspicion that what we're getting is some extension of the New World Order plan to keep us in complete and utter confusion. So I mention this because I ask all of you to open your mind, to be free to discuss anything, that to discuss something that could be fearful or frightening or difficult is part of our job. Open minds, open hearts, willing to discuss, dissect, analyze, and understand whatever is coming at us is the way we are going to approach the new frontier. And yes, in our hearts we trust. Yes, in our hearts we seek out what resonates with us. But let us not be afraid of the discussion. That's where the fear is, the fear of discussing, considering the darkness, is greater than the darkness itself. So please think about that when you are considering the UFO phenomenon and what's coming out of the media and every other kind of foolishness that's happening. Like, for example, I was a speaker, as many of you know, in Toulouse last weekend, an amazing time, 1,500 people. And I was told that there's a law, I find this humorous. There's a law in France where it's called the anti-cult law. Apparently you can't even discuss vegetarianism because this is creating a cult-like impression on the audience. So I had to bite my tongue because I do talk about vegetarianism and how important it is for us to stop eating dead animals all the time. And I had to laugh at that because you're either a vegetarian. Oh, no, you're either with us or you're a vegetarian, i.e. a terrorist. How crazy is this stuff? Got to keep a sense of humor about it. And yet it's important for us to discuss it without fear. So to the people to the very few people who have written to me and said, your message is fearful. No, my message is power, fearlessness. And if you are afraid of what I'm writing in this newsletter, which simply says, get ready. It looks like disclosure is upon us. And in the other paragraph, I'm talking about take your power for your health. If that makes you afraid, please think about what's going on inside of you, because a message of powerlessness and independence and strength is not about fear. It's about power. All right, that's my first message. My second message is, hey, guys, if you are interested in joining me on some of the programs that I've got planned for 2011 of my sacred journeys, I really would love for you to visit my site. Again, it's SyrianRevelations.net, and take a gander, because these programs fill up quickly. And the one that's first on the list, February 7th to 20th, is Egypt. And I've just gotten some news from Egypt, as Zahi Hawass and the authorities keep tightening the screw. They really don't want us to be in those sacred places. All the more reason to join me and go right into them and feel the wonder of ancient Egypt. There is no way they can shut us out. The light prevails. Let that be another message from my newsletter. All right. So with that thought, them thoughts, I would like to introduce my guest. He's probably not a stranger to many of you. He's a dear friend. His name is Curtis Davis. He has a radio program called, well, it used to be just a radio program. Now it's a whole network. He'll be telling you about it. It's called the Occult Network, where he, like me, is out there trying to bring you as much alternative wisdom and truth and controversy to chew on as possible. And I thought it'd be great to have him on, considering I've been on his show more than 3 times, I believe. So here he is. Hi, and by the way, a funny guy. Hi, Curtis.
Hi, Patricia. How are you, sweetheart?
I'm great. Thank you for being on. It's about time you came on my show.
Oh, yes. You know, I've just been so busy. And, you know, we talk a lot in private. But, yeah, you know, I finally got a chance to stop by, and I look forward to it.
Great. Well, I don't know where we're going to start, because, you know, you have so much, such a vast array of information that you're offering. All of it I resonate with just about. But I thought that in occasion of what I just talked about, I'd like to discuss here are the topics that I'd like to bring out to the people. The current wave of incredible sightings that are going on all over this planet.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
what you've been, in your context, what you've been, oops, there was a little do-do-do sound from the computer. Let me just fix that up. what you've been talking to people about and some insights on that. And also, of course, I'd like to talk to you about more illuminations regarding the Kemet, and that is the understanding of ancient pre-Egyptian history, not only Egyptian, but African history. So I'm sure you can tell us a lot about the Kemetian wisdom through the perspective that you have acquired and also that of the many speakers that you host.
Oh, yes.
So let's start talking about your perspectives on what is going on as far as what you've been hearing and discovering about the UFO flurry of sightings that are taking place.
Well, actually, I'm excited by it, you know, Patricia, because I look at it as, you know, I share a story with everyone. You know, I had a conversation with my uncle when I was about 17 years old, and we were watching television, and something came on about extraterrestrials, UFOs. And so at the time, I was thinking like everybody else. I mean, well, I was 17 years old. You know, I wasn't thinking at all because, as I recall, my brain wasn't quite functioning at the time. But anyway, you know, I was sitting there talking to my uncle while we were watching the program. So I'm like, oh, you know, I don't believe in that stuff. You know, that's Hollywood stuff. And he said something to me at the time. He said, Curtis, think about it this way. In this vast universe, limitless universe, who are we to assume that we're the only life forms in it? And even at 17 years old, when he said that, it resonated with me. And then I said, that's true. I said, because if we look beyond just mere planet Earth, there's endless upon endless upon endless of galaxies out there. Then somebody's out there. So when I look at what's going on today with the various sightings, I look at that as our brethren, sistren, you know, those who want to help us are basically doing a test run, you know, to see how they're going to be accepted. And they're eager to help us. You know, unlike a lot of people, I don't see them as coming to, you know, destroy everything on planet Earth. They have nothing to gain by that. because it's too much to offer here as well. But
plus, we're doing such a good job of destroying it ourselves.
Exactly. So basically, what they're doing is coming to possibly knock some sense into our heads, you know, to say, hey, look at what you're doing to the whales, look at what you're doing to animals, look at what you're doing to the land. So let us help you. But they're just doing a little test run right now, I believe, you know, to see how they will be accepted. Because I believe if they just crash the party, then they would cause total chaos.
There have been some very exciting events. One of these is the reporting of a UFO that apparently beamed a laser down to some nuclear stock, missile stocks or something. And so I'm sorry to be so misinformed about it, but apparently it was reported by some general that he had witnessed a beam coming out of an unidentified flying object and being beamed down to a missile silo in one of our military installations. And there was a big fuss about that. And I, of course, thought, far out. Maybe they're going to disarm all the nuclear stations on planet Earth. Great way to begin contact.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree with you. You know, it goes back to what I said. You know, when they're basically just tiptoeing in to knock some sense into our heads as if to say, no, don't do that. You know, what are you building this nuclear stuff for? Stop this. You know, and they're basically coming back to really help us, you know, because I believe that they exist. You know, I don't see it as Hollywood anymore, you know, and, you know, I'm a little jealous because when I hear about other people having these sightings and being abducted, I'm a little jealous. I'm like, why can't I have that experience? You know, I mean, is it the way I dress? You know, none of them seem to happen to run into me. And I look
forward
to meeting
them. Well, it might be because you're sitting in your computer for 23 hours a day. You might want to get outside.
Yes, I do have days like that. True indeed.
Mama said there'd be days like that. But no, truly, I mean, in the case of New York, which happened on October 13, this happened during the day, and hundreds and hundreds of people sighted these craft, later, of course, described as military balloons. But very interestingly and quietly, the media failed to report that it turns out that they closed all three New York airports from 6:45 to 7:45 p.m. on October 13.
Well, being a New Yorker myself, I think, you know, at this stage in the game, Patricia, I look at that as they possibly did the correct thing, because we're living in a day and time where the information that I bring out and you bring out is coming out, you know, it's coming out slowly. And I think had they turned that into an emergency broadcast, if you will, it would have caused utter panic, you know, because New York City is extremely populated, as you know. So in this particular instance, I think, they might have done the right thing by possibly keeping that hush-hush. You know, in time, they'll be able to reveal news like that, but I don't think the time is right now, you know, because New York's a very interesting place.
We had the Shanghai airport a month ago, sighting a craft flying through the airport, and the airport was closed for 4 hours, and it happened again 2 weeks later. So something very big is happening, and it's happening more and more quickly, and it's accelerating. And I think that we are very close to disclosure now.
Oh, yes. You know, and I look forward to it, you know, and it's funny, you know, because it seems to be coinciding with the 2012 stuff. You know, everybody's expecting these very interesting large-scale happenings, you know, to take place with the 2012 thing. And, you know, I'm just excited about it all. You know, I mean, unfortunately, there are those out there who see it as doom and gloom, but no, I don't think so. And I think that this is just a part of it. You know, I love learning and gaining more information about those beings that those non-Earth beings that I like to call them, you know, because a lot of times when people refer to them as aliens and UFOs and extraterrestrials, you know, I mean, we usually give them that name because it's something that's outside of our context. But they're just as much a being, you know, a creation of the Creator as we are. So, you know, I often refer to them as non-Earth inhabitants. And, you know, I look forward to their arrival, you know, and what they have to offer and what they could possibly offer us. I'm just excited about it all. I love it.
Yeah, one thing that, you know, I keep bringing home to people is the fact that no matter how difficult this integration is going to be, because I am not such a fantasy-based person that I just think it's going to be all harmony and bliss and they're going to arrive and fix the boo-boo and we're all going to live in happy land. Unquestionably, the arrival of beings from another dimension or another planet or whatever is going to wreak havoc in many ways. For the starters, of course, it's going to create a sense of panic until we understand what's happening. But it most definitely is going to be the ultimate new paradigm aspect, element, because, I mean, come on. Human beings facing the fact that, or even looking in the eye all around the planet, as you call it, non-Earth beings, or I don't call them non-Earth beings, so I think there are a lot already on our planet. But at any rate, being faced with the reality that these beings are from another planet, and it's show and tell time, and this is the new paradigm. And it is very exciting that it seems to be bubbling into a potential reality around 2012 because, of course, what greater catalyst could we have for such a shift in consciousness as globally embracing the idea that we are no longer orphans of this universe? How exciting is this?
Oh, yeah. You know, and, you know, the way I see it, well, anytime there's change, there's great change. You know, there's great upheaval. You know, there was always a little, a little pain and pestilence. You know, that seems to be par for the course. But usually at the end, because I always feel that nature, the universe, will always correct anything, anything that is unnatural. You know, nature will make unnatural. There's always that balance. And, you know, despite the upheaval that's going to come with it, there's going to be some benefits as well. You know what I mean? And because I've been doing this a long time, you know, I often let my imagination run wild. Now, we always speak of them coming to visit us as we evolve in consciousness and as we go along in the future. Could this possibly open up avenues, ways of travel in the reverse direction, where we'll be able to possibly travel to other planets as well? You know, I mean, instead of just running around Earth, you know, and just visiting places in Earth, could this mean that also this could possibly be a door opened up to interplanetary travel?
Not only that, but it's very likely that they have conquered time travel.
Ah.
So how about if we are gifted with, I bet you it's so simple that we just can't believe it. Because,
exactly.
You know, we are still so bound to the laws of physics as we understand them from a 3D earthly perspective that the idea of time travel is still, in the quantum physicist's mind, the ultimately complicated, unbelievable endeavor. But what if it's not? What if it's just that simple? And that's how they are popping in and out of our atmosphere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when I look at things like that, you know, I can't understand why many people see it as something that's fearful. Well, I guess one of the great fears that many people have is fear of change. You know, unfortunately, a lot of times people tend to think in the box. And, you know, a box can be very imprisoning. But see, it's people like us, Patricia, that think out of the box, and we're willing to show others, you know, that, you know, get out of that box, get out of that comfort zone, you know, because change is inevitable anyway, whether you want to accept it or not. So when I look at things like this, you know, I just see it as a part of a great change. Yeah, there's going to be some upheaval, of course. You know, there's going to be some panic because we've always been taught that, you know, this is, you know, we only see this on TV, Lost in Space, you know, and the Jetsons. But when we learn, when we find out that, no, this wasn't just some Cecil B. DeMille movie, this stuff really exists, then, yeah, it's going to cause quite a shift in paradigm. Because one thing I've learned, see, I'm on to Hollywood now. I know their tricks. Whatever you see on the screen, and I honestly believe this, whatever you see on the screen already exists. They just haven't told us yet. Or it's about to exist. And they're testing us to see how it's going to be accepted.
Yeah, so, yes,
I finally, you know, I finally figured them out.
Well, you know, they're on the payroll, as they say. Well, you know, it's an interesting segue to a conversation that I know we're going to enjoy getting into, and that is the discussion of Akhenaten. Because even though people are saying the first time that humankind, the greatest leap ever, the truth is, most likely we have had moments in history when the civilization has confronted alien encounter as well. And one of these, I'm firmly convinced, is with Akhenaten, who comes in to, nobody really understands where he comes from. Now, this is the pharaoh with the elongated head, who has been called the heretic king, and I know that you know this already, and has also been called the extraterrestrial pharaoh. Now, his deformities have been decried as some disease that he had, and yet you look at this head and you say, this ain't no human head. Akhenaten had to be an extraterrestrial. So let's talk about that, because as you know, we're talking about civilization embracing, being afraid of change. Akhenaten comes in, he takes the people out of Egypt, he builds a community in the desert. Much against the approval of the priests of Thebes, and starts a community that believes in the Aten, which has been described as the sun or a symbol of the sun, but looks to me like a spaceship. Mm. He's always sitting under this half sun with rays coming down, and it has been described, the Aten, as a symbol of the sun, but you know, It looks like he's sitting there under the lights of a spaceship. What do you make of that?
Well, I have to throw some humor in it here. You know, it just goes to show you, Patricia, that there's nothing new under the sun. Now, and believe me, I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the equation here. Now, as you said, he relocated his kingdom. He constructed a new kingdom out into the desert, you know, out of the city. Well, when I last checked, the last time a group of people got together and constructed a city out in the desert, it turned into Las Vegas. Okay. So now it just goes to show you that there's nothing new under the sun. And if you go to Las Vegas now, you'll notice a lot of Egyptian decoration, you know, as far as the hotels. But, you know, when we look at Akhenaten, you know, I look at it as, you know, Akhenaten has taken a beating. And, you know, because a lot of people feel that he took Egypt away from the spiritual. But it was change, you know, and I agree with you. When you really look at Akhenaten, you say, was that somebody that was born here? Doesn't quite look like it. So
And also his children have that same skull, which is absolutely not, I mean, you can say his hands were, for example, his fingers are really long, and they explain that as some disease, but that skull is completely an alien skull. There is nothing human about it.
Yeah, and then when you look at what he built, You know, the city, the kingdom that he built, many of those, well, practically all of them, are still standing today. So could Akhenaten have been really all that bad? And, you know better than I do, Patricia, because you go to Egypt, you know, like a million times a year. And you get to
actually,
see
it for yourself. Let me just correct you on that. Most of the city of Tel Amarna is gone. Not much was remained standing. But I am taking people this year on the February journey. We're going out to Tel Amarna to walk the sands of this very amazing guy. I mean, he took on the entire structure of Egyptian. You know very well the churches do not like disruption. The Hebrews decided to go after Jesus Christ because he was an anarchist and they wanted him out. He was telling people not to go to church, to find God within them. And by the way, Akhenaten, many people, a lot of scholars have suggested that Jesus Christ may very well be the incarnation of Akhenaten. So
interesting. I've heard that too. I've heard that several times myself, you know, and I've noticed Akhenaten has really taken a beating. But then at first I was believing like everyone else, like, oh my goodness, you know, it seems like he ruined a great dynasty. But then I thought about it. I said, Akhenaten also made some tremendous contributions as well. And, I just found it very interesting. And it all goes that you really got me thinking when you mentioned earlier, because, I thought about it once or twice about, well, is this guy really from here? Because him nor his offspring really look like they were here. I mean, I know they say we evolved biologically as well, but wow. And so, you know, I've just come to the conclusion that that I don't think Akhenaten was from here. I believe Akhenaten was one of those that came from not here, and then, upon his death, just returned to where he came from.
Yeah, well, don't we all?
You know, as they say, he wested.
From sand to sand, from dust to dust, right?
Well, exactly. It's all
excited about Akhenaten because he is becoming—he's coming more and more into our consciousness as people become more aware of the Egyptian storyline, and certainly the spiritual people have a fascination with this. Pharaoh, this heretic pharaoh, because he brought monotheism to Egypt. And even though he basically just said, here, you go ahead and take it. I'm taking my believers out into the desert, which was a very Christ-like thing to do, if you think about it. He went with his disciples and his followers, and he said, you can have your temples, you can have your wealth. And he built the city of, let's say, a community, a commune, where the only god was the Aten, the one god, and where festivity and joy was the, supposedly from what we read, was the overriding factor, a utopia.
Yeah, I believe basically what Akhenaten was a rebel, you know, willing to step away from the norm. Because like you said, when we look at theology, and what's Egypt taught in in theology? Egypt was a place that was signifies bondage that people had to be rescued from. So that right there makes it evil in the minds of those who subscribe to that ideology, and that's the way that it's always been perpetrated here, especially in Western civilization. And the greatest, the one who really helped that along was Cecil B. DeMille, the Ten Commandments. So now, for those, the uneducated, the uninitiated, those who follow the church and other religious belief. When they hear Egypt, oh, that's a bad place. Okay,
yeah,
so not realizing that they've been miseducated, you know, in reference to Egypt.
Well, yeah, because Egypt, ancient Egypt, was the center of culture and learning and wisdom. Let's not forget the Library of Alexandria and the Greeks, who were supposedly the greatest enlightened scholars and academicians, all aspired to go to Egypt to learn.
That's right, and that's still going on today. You know, it's still very much going on today. But you know, when we look at religious thought and the way people talk about Egypt, you know, it's really funny how so many truths seem to really just slip by them. Now, look at Moses. Now, Moses originally grew up in Egypt and then was cast out. You know, the typical Bible story. But then Moses was sent back supposedly by God, and when he came back, he rescued the so-called slaves. So now basically what seems to slip by theologians is that Moses got his original training in Egypt, in Kemet. And that was the power that later, I believe, helped him, according to the Bible story, enabled him to accomplish his task. But it all started in Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Tutmosis was supposedly Moses, right?
I've heard that. There's a lot of people saying that, and there's also a lot of people that saying that, no, that's not true. So when I look at it, I'm really in the middle, you know, because I can't say whether it's true, and I can't really say that it's not true. But a lot of people have said that, and I've heard it a lot. But from the information that I gathered, if I was forced to make a choice, I'd say, yeah, it was true. You know, Moses, Tutmosis, there's just, you know, it's too similar. So I would be inclined to agree that it's true, more so than not true.
Well, what are you hearing in all of your interviews? You've been interviewing some of the same people that I've had. You've had on, but you've had on Carmen Bolter, who I've not had the pleasure of interviewing. And you've been so excited about what she brings forward. Can you tell us a little bit about Carmen's basic focus on what is her work about in Egypt, and what is she basically telling us about the Pyramid Code is the name of her book, isn't it?
Yes, it's the name of her DVD, The Pyramid Code. And Dr. Carmen Bolter, wonderful, wonderful individual, just like you, Patricia. And her work, The Pyramid Code, in her work, what I gathered from it, and, you know, it's on the Occult Network as well, what I gathered from it is that she was pointing out a lot of the structures in ancient Egypt. And she was basically debunking much of what has been bandied about for many, many years in the field of Egyptology. And then she also had a close relationship with a mutual friend, some guy that you know, Patricia, Hakim, Father Hakim, and who plays a prominent role in her work, The Pyramid Code. So basically what I gathered from The Pyramid Code that Dr. Carmen Bolter was doing was bringing the spiritual, you know, into just the, you know, into Egyptology. In other words, she's basically telling the Egyptologists that, look, there's more to this than just excavations and, you know, admiring the hieroglyphics and figuring out who built the pyramids. There's a spiritual side to this. And if we just turn to the spiritual side and, you know, stop being so dogmatic in our view towards Egyptology, the spiritual side might answer a lot of questions that we have now. It's a very, tremendous, tremendous work. You know, I highly, you know, I really advise people to really take a look at that, The Pyramid Code. Excellent, excellent piece of work.
Well, the thing is that the powers that be in Egypt and most of the world do not want the spiritual aspect to be revealed because it's too empowering for the human race, first of all. And secondly, in the case of Egypt, they do not want the strong religion, the Muslim religion, to be affected or to be disturbed by discoveries of some ancient belief system.
Well, when I look at, you know, unfortunately, I have not had the opportunity to visit Egypt as yet. But I know for a fact that you're gonna change that. I can't wait to I fully intend to visit with your group. But you know, as you were saying earlier, Patricia, that when we look at what's going on over in Egypt now and all of these obstacles that are coming up, I don't believe they're going to stand because there's so much there to learn, and you can't stop it. You know, I mean, a lot of times when we go through change, there always appears to be obstacles that jump up. But if they're not really righteous and just, you know, in my mind, if you're holding back information that's going to be beneficial to others, then somehow, some way, you're not going to succeed. You may succeed for a little while, but unfortunately, you're going to bring about your own downfall. So all of these people that are making all these rules and preventing the spiritual teachings from coming out, I don't believe they're going to succeed. It may appear that they're succeeding for a while, but in the grand scheme of things, they're going to fall. So I really don't panic. You know, I just look forward to nature taking its course.
Well, I will say this, as a spiritual teacher, for lack of a better description of myself, the challenges are getting much stronger. And that makes sense because the power of the experience, the initiation, is also intensifying. So I look at obstruction as challenge and a part of the process of bringing in the higher information. So that's my job when I bring people to Egypt and all the other sites, all the other journeys I take them on, is to make sure those doors stay open. I don't care how many authorities make it, like, for example, Sekhmet, which is probably, I think, my most powerful experience in Egypt, going to the statue of Sekhmet, the lion goddess. That statue is alive. In the temple that it sits, it is alive. And when you go before Sekhmet, when the gates are open for you energetically, it can be a completely, totally life-altering experience. So they made it harder and harder to go there. When I first started going to Egypt, it was this little unknown temple out on the side of Karnak. Very small little chapel. Nobody even knew about it because Karnak is so exquisite and grandiose that nobody even went back there. But we went. We spiritual people used to go. And now they've shut it down. It's closed for renovation. And they're making it very hard for us to get near Sekhmet. And, of course, a lot of people that go, there are people that take spiritual groups and they just pop over there and then they get get turned away. Whereas I always get in there because I pay big bucks to make sure that we can get in there. I don't care what that means. We have to have permission to be there. And they're trying to close a lot of sites in Egypt. But I think it has a lot to do with the intensity of the experience we're drawing out now. And I invite people, for God's sakes, if you have a yearning to know this incredible energy, now is the time to take yourself to Egypt.
Oh, yes, indeed. You know, and that's why I'm in such a rush to get there, you know, because, you know, as we said, there's always going to be that upheaval there. You know, you don't get stronger by lifting feathers. You know, you get stronger by lifting weights, usually beyond just a little bit more than you can lift. So when I see what's going on there now, you know, Patricia, honestly, love, I don't think they're hiding something, and they're working too hard to hide it, and that makes it all the more valuable because human desire can be really strong. Now, you know, talking about Sekhmet and in your great book, Where Pharaohs Dwell, and when I was reading about your experiences with Sekhmet, it's like I was right there with you. I'm seeing all of this. I'm experiencing all of this. You know, I mean, majority of the time I was hiding behind you, you know, because, I mean, it was a very intense experience. And I'm like, wow, this woman has a lot of courage. But when we look at that, you know, to say the least, that's like saying Shaq is big. You know, but when looking at that type of energy, you know, okay, you could put up obstacles to impede, you know, humans, bodies from approaching these places, but you can't stop the energy. So now if you experience Sekhmet's energy on a small scale right there in the temple, then that energy is going to grow because you can't put fences around the energy. So as they begin, and I feel, as they, the more obstacles that they place in people's way, trying to keep them away from the sacred teachings, the stronger this energy is going to get. And sooner or later, this very energy that they're trying to keep people away from is going to destroy them, the ones who are putting up the obstacles. So let them have their fun. You know, their days are numbered. You know, and I honestly believe that.
Oh, boy, I'll tell you, what a revolutionary moment for us all. How exciting. Indeed, it is exciting. Tell us a little bit more about what you are doing now with your occult network, because obviously you've got a pretty exciting project going on. Tell us what your focus is.
Well, right now, it has been an idea of mine for a long time, you know, well over 10 years. And I spent a long time trying to figure out how to take much of what I learned and bring it to others on a large scale. And I initially started out with the radio show, Occult Science Radio. And, you know, I had never done radio before. You know, and a lot of times people always said to me, well, why don't you do radio? You seem to have the personality and the voice for it. I heard it for many, many years. And within recent years, I decided to start a show, Occult Science Radio, on Blog Talk Radio, and began to develop a following. And when I saw the following that I was developing with that show, I began to crystallize my idea for, instead of just doing something like this on the radio, how about bringing it to television or the Internet? Because as society goes on, people are spending more time in front of their computers than their televisions. So how about bringing this truth, this knowledge for truth seekers, non-mainstream information to the masses, not just on a local scale, but on a global scale? And as I began doing research and, you know, and mobilizing, you know, the forces, those who could help me bring it to manifestation, it really became clear. And now it finally came to fruition. And when I look at what's going on with it now and the response that it's getting, you know, it's very overwhelming because I hear from people now, you know, from the fans on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube. They say that that's information that many of them have not heard before. They've been introduced to people like yourself that they have not heard about in mainstream media. And it's become really, really new, something new and refreshing. And we just expanded our premium content. And those same members, when they take a look at the premium content, they're really blown away because now they see that, wow, you know, we've really been miseducated. So when I look at what's going on with the Occult Network now, we're an up-and-coming network, and our sole purpose is to undo the damage, much like what you're doing, Patricia. You know, our work is similar, is to basically bring people back to themselves that the mainstream media has taken away. You know, to put it all in a nutshell.
Now, you've told me that some people are resistant to the word occult and get uncomfortable with that description. Tell us a little bit why you chose the idea of the occult network and how that word has been misconstrued. Tell us a little bit about your understanding of people's resistance to that word and what you're doing.
Oh, I deal with that every day, and that's what makes what we're doing so necessary. Just like everybody else, you know, there was a time that I believe, like everyone else, you know, I grew up in a Christian household, also got a touch of Islam as well. So there was a time, too, even myself, when back in my younger days, when that word occult meant the boogeyman to me. But times are changing. And it's really ironic, you know, as well as amusing, that even in this day and age, when we have all of this information available to us, where you can easily find information, when people hear that word, they still get the heebie-jeebies. So when I first thought of the occult network, I said, well, you know, how are people going to receive that word occult, because you know, there's a lot of people out there that are still miseducated, that are still programmed. But then a thought came to me, and it was very empowering. And I said, well, damn it, you know, that's what my my job is to re-educate people as to what the word really means. All it means is hidden knowledge. And isn't that what you and I are doing, Patricia? We're bringing forth hidden knowledge, non-mainstream information, information that people aren't used to hearing. So now I feel it's our job to, when people hear that word, the occult, we basically just have to re-educate them as to what the word occult really means. All it means is hidden information, hidden knowledge. Knowledge that you're not used to hearing. And, you know, so I send people to
the... The word occult comes from occultus in Latin, which means, referring to knowledge of the hidden. It actually comes from, the word occult comes from the Latin word occultus. It means clandestine, hidden, secret, and it refers to the knowledge of the hidden, as you said. So, of course, like everything else, it has been used by people that are doing dark work, but it also has been used like for people like you who are using it as a term, a general term for esoteric, or that which is hidden from view. I wonder if occo, the eye, and occult have the same roots. Probably hidden from sight.
Oh yeah, oh, you know. And what really makes me laugh, Patricia, is that, you know, on the surface, what I've noticed with people is that on the surface, when they hear the word occult, you know, they get the shakes. But then people seem to have a fascination with that which is secret. I mean, if you want people to take a look at something, all you have to do is tell them, don't look at it. You know,
yeah,
that it's sinful.
Look at it.
Oh yes. You know, I mean, you could stand before the world and say, this is evil, this is the worst, you know, don't look at it. And what are people gonna do? People are gonna do exactly the opposite. They wanna go see what is so unspeakable. You know, what is it you're trying to keep from us? What do you feel is so bad that we can't see? Well, we wanna see it.
Especially, you know, when you've got religious fanaticism reaching a point to where the other day some Baptist minister came out and said that yoga, practicing yoga, is demonic.
Okay.
Practicing yoga is demonic. And, you know, it is really interesting that this inquisition is back. Yeah. I mean, let's face it, folks, you know, there is a serious inquisition going on in our societies. It's getting stronger and stronger. And You worried about the word occult when a pastor is saying that yoga is demonic?
Well, what I think what's going on there, Patricia, is that they're fighting for their survival. Because let's look at what's going on worldwide. Many churches, many mosques, and many so-called houses of worship are closing. What does that tell you? That maybe people are beginning to look in another direction. You know, so basically what they're doing is fighting for their survival. You know, they're trying their best to hang on, because you got to remember, the theological community is big business. You know, billions of dollars. So now, you know, and what they fail to realize, but they're not going to teach you this, is much of their practices are just, you know, for lack of a better way of putting it, bastardized versions of the occult. Okay, so now when we look at the church community, you know, the so-called religious community, really coming out strong against those who are studying the esoteric, the occult, you know, and metaphysics, and so many ways of the spiritual path, you know, so many ways of, you know, people putting it, they're basically just fighting for their survival. Like, no, you know, don't believe in that stuff. You know, that stuff is going to possess you, because they themselves know that if people begin to turn away from what they're being taught in these churches and mosques, and really begin to study the occult, which is the study of the self, the inner self, the hidden, this part of yourself that you've been miseducated away from, they know that that's going to empower people. And of course, that's going to kill their business, the church. So they're just fighting for their survival.
This goes back to what I started the show with, which was I was talking about the fear of discussing, the fear of, you know, we seem to be subdividing more and more into little boxes of thought that this is okay to think, but this is not. And if you stand up for something you believe in, you're putting energy into the negative direction. All these weird interpretations of what is happening, and has everything to do with the fact that all bets are off now. Planet Earth is going through a revolution like we can only imagine. And even though so many forces are trying to contain knowledge, wisdom, contain us, energy, the lid is off. And so people are scared. I mean, it's like, oh, it's just too much to think about. I want to be very happy just thinking about peace and harmony in the world, or I want to go to church and make it all better, or whatever. And the truth is, there are 6.8 billion people on this planet, and everybody has an opinion about everything. And what we've got to do is pull together so that the overall consciousness, the collective, is perpetually rising to its power, to the power of the souls, the power of the individual, and the power of the all. And whatever that takes, whatever's hidden, come on out.
Oh, yeah. You know, and what I see going on now is that so much was hidden that now it's starting to come out in droves.
That's right.
Because, you know, it's just like when you shake up a can of soda. You know, with the more you suppress it, the more energy you give it. So, if you open up a can of soda shortly after you shake it up, we know what happens. You're going to be wearing it, not drinking it. So, you know, so much was suppressed, you know, that, but then again, you know, I have to say, when people say that much of it was hidden, you know, I don't think so. I just believe that in many instances, people were just too lazy to do research. Because
too distracted to look at truth.
Oh, well, you know, of course, you know, the Super Bowl and the Academy Awards and the concerts and so on and so forth. You know, and the information was always there. It's just that no one was seeking. But now we're living in a day and time now that there's just so much media that information, you know, information is just coming out. It is coming out by accident now. You know, we're living in a world now where you practically have to be living in a cave somewhere to not know what's going on. And the information.
Yeah, like Osama bin Laden hooked up to the cave in Afghanistan with his liver biopsy machine.
Yeah, you know what?
I have to draw this to a close because we've already reached the end of the hour. But folks,
wow. Do
tune in. Yeah, boom, hello. time is morphing. You've been listening to my dear friend Curtis Davis. His great network is called theoccultnetwork.com. He's got every kind of information on there for you. You'll even see my mug there a couple of times. So please check him out. He's doing good work. Remember, to bring the truth out costs. It costs in blood, sweat, and tears. It requires you have the courage to stand up against the wave of control, of everything, and say, this is what I believe in. This is my talk. This is my walk. And I honor you for doing that, Curtis.
Thank you so much for having me. I love you. I love you all. Thanks for bringing me in front of your audience. And let's do this again. Thank you so much, beloved.
Thank you, too, Curtis. All right, people, I want to make one announcement before I go. You've probably read, if you're following some of my beeps and pleeps and whatever they're called, I will be leaving BBS Radio. My last show will be November 13th. It's a difficult decision to make because I love doing this show, but I just can't do everything I'm trying to do in these days. So tune in until I'm off the air, and then sign up for my newsletter so you can keep posted of what I've got cooking. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. I'll be with you next week, and remember, live long and prosper. This is Pat Corey, thanking you for tuning in to Beyond the Matrix. Air. To think outside the box.